Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. If you think you're preoccupied with money, wait until you meet Harley Spiller a little bit later in the program. He definitely is. But first, when juveniles are arrested, certified as adults, and convicted of serious crimes, it often begins a long and costly cycle when they are sent to adult prisons. There, they are exposed to adult inmates and often inspired to continue a life of crime. Some even refer to the prisons as graduate schools. Missouri has a program designed to interrupt the cycle. It's called the Dual Jurisdiction Program, the integral parts of which are the courts and the Missouri Division of Youth Services. Joining me in studio to talk about dual jurisdiction are Missouri Circuit Court Judge Jack Garvey. Sarah Johnson is an assistant Missouri State Public Defender in St. Louis. And Terrence Irons is a young man who has successfully completed the Missouri Dual Jurisdiction Program. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judge Garvey, let me begin with you and ask you if you can give me kind of an overview of what this program really is.
This program encounters a defendant when they are either a juvenile or they've been certified as an adult. They are younger than 17 or 17. The program then, rather than exposing them to the adult system of the Missouri Department of Corrections, puts them in a program over the next 4 years where they are exposed to group therapy, job training, vocational training. During that whole time, myself as the sentencing judge and the attorney, in this case Sarah, are given update reports on Terrence and the defendant, and we're told how he's progressing along the line. At the end of the term, at the end of that 4 years, a decision needs to be made whether or not he would be sentenced to the full, to a real term of imprisonment, or if he would be released in the program because he successfully completed the program. That's the overall program.
Well, what happens to the record if, in fact, this person completes successfully the program?
They will have a conviction on their record. However, they won't be doing that time that they would have been exposed to if they were in the adult system.
And in terms of the process, if you could clarify it for me, exactly what the process is to make this determination.
The determination is made, first off, really by the defendant himself. That question needs to be, that conversation needs to be between the attorney and the defendant to see whether or not he would like to be in the program. However, a report is then done on the defendant, and then it's up to the Division of Youth Services to decide whether or not they would accept this person into the program. Then it's up to the judge to decide whether or not they want this person into the program. So there's a lot of stops along the way. If everything is green-lighted all the way, then the person is essentially sentenced to the program.
Is this something that happens very often?
Not at all, no.
Why not?
Well, there's a lot going on here. Part of it is, like I've said, the defendant, if they're facing a lower level, like a C felony, and they're only being exposed to 4 years and in prison, if even that, they would only do probably 5 months and then get out, or they'd probably even get probation. They don't want to expose themselves to a program that they would be in for 4 years. Number two, the court may not want to be involved in something like this. In Terrence's instance, he was involved in the case where he had driven a car towards a police officer. So it was a kind of a sensitive case, exposing the court maybe if Terrence had not successfully completed the program, then he would have been out or not out or exposed again to the program. So it is, there's a lot going on with this program.
Well, what is the range of crimes for which people would qualify for it?
All the felonies are eligible for this, from a Class D all the way to a Class A.
And if a young man or young woman, I suppose women are involved in this as well, or is it just for males?
No, it's for women too. Yeah.
And if a young man does not successfully complete the crime, then they'll have to do the time. Is that correct?
That is correct. They'll come back in front of me. I remember in this case, Sarah and I, after Terrence had been sentenced to the program, we were watching him like the stock market. We were reading the reports. The initial reports weren't that good. And Sarah and I would shake our head and commiserate like, oh boy, I don't know whether he's going to succeed in this program. And then we generally saw him start to improve in the program and get through the program. So, yeah, there's a lot invested by everyone if someone is sent through this program.
Well, Sarah, let me turn to you and get your take.
Sure. So I met Terrence when he was about 16 years old, just about 16. And, you know, I'll say that I think the dual jurisdiction program is one of the best programs for certified juveniles. It gives them the ability to graduate from high school, not get a GED. It allows them to get college credits. Terrence is almost done with his second full school year of college. So it provides them with an opportunity to be successful in the community. It gives them those tools. And it also just gives them an ability to be a child. You know, one of the things that we forget about is that these certified juveniles are still children. And so it allowed Terrence to become an adult through a rite of passage that, you know, many certified juveniles or adults who are facing prison in the adult system don't get to have. So it's awesome.
I've heard it referred to as an underutilized program.
Absolutely. I think it is underutilized. I can say that Terrence is the only child that I've had certified adult that has been accepted into the program. Although now the statute reads that all children who are under the age of 17 and a half shall be screened for the dual jurisdiction program. So this is something now that the courts have to be doing.
Judge, do you think it's underutilized?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. Because here's what we're fighting. It's every day judges are faced with this decision of people like Terrence that don't have structure. And we are fighting constantly this culture of the street. And so if the choice is either probation, with the underfunded probation department, or prison, where you've said it's graduate school, they're not very good choices. So if we have a program where we can send someone where they have structure and they get away from the street, many times, and when I have these situations with younger offenders, I'm thinking about putting them in really just to save their life, to just take them off the street for a couple of years so they're not killed or arrested again. A lot of times you're put in a situation where you're just trying to remove them from a situation. So where I can remove a defendant but then put them in a good place where they have all this training and everything, yes, it's a great program.
Do you have any other options at all other than this program or, if they're properly certified, an adult prison?
Well, the other option is probation or the other option is prison. They're the only other options, yes.
Right. Well, let me turn to Terrence. Terrence, you've been listening to all of this. A little bit of it has not been flattering to you, talking about not only the crime, but also the fact that you didn't adapt very well to it initially. What was going on with you at this time?
At the time of not really adapting to it, I mean, it was pretty much obvious that I was out of my element. I wasn't comfortable. So in that place, that really made me just be, I guess, kind of just negative towards the whole thing, not really thinking positive about the second opportunity that I had, well, the second chance that I had. So I was just kind of really negative at the beginning of it. So, but once I kind of really started to understand that this is for me and I have to better my future and I want a better future, I kind of took advantage of the opportunity that was given to me. And so once I kind of realized that this is for me and nobody else, I kind of like took advantage of that.
When you talk about the place you were in, are you talking about where you were mentally at that time?
Mentally.
Or physically the place? Because there is a place where you are sent.
Right.
In Montgomery City, correct?
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, basically I explained this dual jurisdiction program in Montgomery City, where they call it MCYC for Montgomery City Youth Center. And it was basically like, it was really unusual to me. It was formed, surrounded by it. So it was pretty crazy at first. But I mean, once you really like buckle down and understand the situation that you're in, it's really helpful in a way. It really is. I mean, it changed my life. And I don't think it's being used enough. But I do think that it is one of the best programs that we have here in Missouri, and it worked for me. So if it can work for me, then I think it can work for anybody.
There are only 40 beds, as I understand it, at this facility.
Correct.
Is that correct? That's not very many.
Yeah, it's not.
Were they all being utilized when you were there?
At certain points, they were. At certain points, they were all being utilized. At other point in times, they're not being utilized. So it's pretty much a case-by-case basis, really. So, and like they said, everybody doesn't get accepted into the program. So because it's not like a program where you can commit a crime and then your lawyer brings it up so you get accepted. That's not how it works. It's actually a committee that you have to sit in front of or stand in front of and basically tell them about yourself. And in the time frame of you telling them about yourself, they basically want to judge you and rate you and see if you qualify for their program.
So, Sarah, you would not necessarily trigger this process.
Well, I did with Terrence's case. We came in front of Judge Garvey when he was in Division 16, which is the main trial division. And I pitched the case to him and the circuit attorney and asked if they would be open-minded to trying this program. And Judge Garvey said, absolutely. So what we have to do is first, Terrence has to plead guilty, and then Scott Odom with the Division of Youth Services has to evaluate Terrence, and that's what he's talking about, the committee. And they come evaluate him, and we have to provide them with school records, any mental health records, if there are any discipline history, the police reports, and then they write a report and then make their recommendation to Judge Garvey.
Terrence, how difficult was it for you to plead guilty?
At the time, it was pretty difficult because I had a lot going through my mind. And also, I was afraid of the unknown. So it was pretty much like I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. But, I mean, I had my family behind me. I had Sarah. I had Judge Garvey. And everybody seemed to be on the same page, which was getting me the help I needed and trying to get me out of the streets, really. And so after I did a lot of thinking, I finally came to my senses that this program would be the best for me.
Judge, in terms of the number of young men and women who have been through this, you probably don't have any numbers off the top of your head, but is it safe to assume that most of them who go through it are not recidivists? They don't come back before you or another judge at some time?
In this program here at Dual Jurisdiction, no, I've never had any type of recidivism problem at all. Now, having said that, I think I've only sentenced 3 to the program.
I was struck by the fact that there are only 40 beds in this institution, if we can use that term. I guess it's right. However, I have to believe that there are many more young men and women who would qualify for this statewide. We're talking about a statewide program.
Absolutely. I think, you know, sentencing can't be reduced to, you know, 130 characters on a Twitter account. I mean, there's a lot that's going into sentencing someone, and a lot of it factors the defense attorney and the pitch that they're making to the judge, but they have to back that up with proof and information, and the judge is weighing, you know, protecting society, but they also have a human being in front of them and also trying to consider their interests. So you're weighing their interests, punishment, protection, remorse. There's a lot that goes into this. So a program like this takes them out and does a lot more than just warehousing someone.
Again, only 40 beds. You would you would think that there are more crimes committed that would qualify for this. Just and if it works so well, I have to wonder why there aren't more people taking advantage of it.
There's a couple reasons going on here. A lot of the attorneys don't know about it. I mean, Sarah Johnson really stepped up and really educated herself and me about the program, even though I had exposure to it when I was in juvenile court. The second thing is it's buy-in by the defendant. A defendant knows that they're eligible, but they don't want anything to do with it because it puts more on them than they think that they should have. And so I think that's the number one reason is the defendants don't want to do it. Would you want to go up for 4 years almost up into some place that you've never been before, away from your family at a young age like that when you don't know anything, like Terrence said, the unknown? It's a difficult sell to make.
How often, Sarah, have you tried to sell this idea? Is it just the once?
I've tried to a couple times in the past, and I distinctly remember one time it wasn't successful and the child was certified adult, was sentenced to prison. So when thinking about the alternatives, I mean, this is just a much better alternative, and it gives people the ability to move on with their life.
Well, it would certainly seem to be a better alternative. What we're talking about is a dual jurisdiction program here in the state of Missouri. My guests in studio are Missouri Circuit Court Judge Jack Garvey. Sarah Johnson is with us. She's with the Missouri Public Defender's Office. Also with us in studio is Terrence Irons, a young man who has gone through the dual jurisdiction program and come out of it, I think, Terrence, probably a lot better than you went in. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Okay. We'll take our break, come back, and continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part part of it, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on Missouri's dual jurisdiction program in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Ferguson is the site of a new Boys and Girls Club of Greater St. Louis. The ribbon will be cut at the facility this afternoon. The club will serve youth ages 6 through 18 in Ferguson and the surrounding communities and neighborhoods. Attorneys for a Missouri man scheduled for execution this week are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene. Richard Strong was convicted of fatally stabbing his girlfriend and her 2-year-old daughter 15 years ago in suburban St. Louis. His execution is scheduled for 6 p.m. on Tuesday. And Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner plans stops today in southern Illinois to discuss his agenda for the state. His speeches at a Marion Harley-Davidson dealer and Belleville farm and store come the day before the Illinois legislature is to convene for a special session as lawmakers try to compromise on a budget deal. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation on the dual jurisdiction program for juvenile offenders in Missouri. My guest in studio, Missouri Circuit Court Judge Jack Garvey, Sarah Johnson with his Missouri Public Defender's Office here in St. Louis, and Terrence Irons, who has successfully completed the program. Terrence, let me come back to you and have you tell me what a typical day was like at this facility in Montgomery City.
The typical day was sort of like, I want to say sort of like the college campus life, really. Not all the way, but kind of close to it. We wake up in the morning about 6:20, 6:30, do our details, eat breakfast, come back, do hygiene, get ready for school. Then we'll be in school a full 8 hours. This is high school. So, and then after school, we would come back to our dorms, and basically we have like therapy sessions, not as individuals, but as the whole group. We would just have therapy sessions and have a little constructive free time, basically personal time to yourself, and then probably dinner or just some little group activity in the middle where it's kind of like all the youth participate in the activity. And after that, we probably have dinner or something, and then we come back, and then it's another treatment, which is what they call it, session. And we basically just, that's basically what it's about, is treatment. I mean, you're not there to watch TV, play the game, or bull crap around. It's basically about treatment. That's what you come there for.
Now, how long were you there?
About 3.5 years.
When did it click in? If you got off to a bad start with this and didn't figure that it was right for you, that you were, you know, out of your place, as you put it earlier, when did it click in that in fact, this was the right place for you to be?
It kind of clicked in when I started to realize that I wasn't achieving anything. Like, I wasn't gaining anything. I was just sitting here wasting time. And once I realized that I was just wasting time, then it was like, okay, it's time for me to set goals for myself. It's time for me to plan for the future. It's time for me. It's kind of like looking in a mirror, like, where do I want to be in 10 years, or what do I want people to remember me as? And as I thought about those things, I just started to progress, because I wanted better for myself. I wanted better for my family, because that was just my mindset. I just wanted better.
Do you think you were fairly typical? Your response and reaction to all of this was fairly typical to those who were there with you?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was. Because, again, I really do think people are afraid of the unknown, and you kind of got that sometimes. Once I kind of got it together and I was kind of like a father figure to some, or a big brother figure to some, when you try to tell them to do things, or when you try to show them how to do things the right way, you will see how they start to reject you, because they're afraid to change their old ways. Like I was afraid to change my old ways because of rejection from society, but I didn't know how society would react to me if I was to change my ways, if I was to become a better person. So,
what about the readjustment when all of this was through and you came back home?
the readjustment was kind of exciting. It was scary. Mostly it was exciting. It really was, because I got to see my family. I got to go to the refrigerator when I wanted, you know. So it was pretty exciting.
Typical teenager, I would say.
Yeah.
And acceptance and response to your peers, the people that maybe you'd been on the street with?
The acceptance from them was pretty much I kind of started right off like, hey, I'm my own person. I don't really do the same things I used to do. I think that was pretty obvious because a lot of people I didn't want to hang out with. But I'm pretty sure they understood why I didn't want to hang out with them or why I don't go to certain places and things like that.
Pressure on you from any of them to return to the old ways?
I think it was pressure for them, but not so much for me, because a lot of the things I did when I was 16 and 15 was pretty stupid. So I didn't really have no satisfaction to do them again. So I didn't really fall back into it. I mean, temptation is everywhere, but I'm so busy with school and other things, I don't really feed off into the temptation.
Well, 15 and 16-year-olds do a lot of stupid things. I think we can all agree on that. Sarah, during this process, while he's down there, are you following up? Are you in touch? What is your role?
Sure. So Terrence would call me every, I don't know, a couple months probably, and just ask me a question and check in. So I would call him back. They would always give me access to Terrence at Montgomery Youth Center. I would have the ability to call him anytime. So absolutely. And I stayed in touch with his mom. His family is very tight-knit and very close. So they were very supportive of Terrence this whole time. So yeah, but it was incredible to see him on the day of sentencing. I looked down the hallway and I saw this man in place of this boy that I had represented 4 years ago.
And Judge, your role in any of this during the time that he's away, how closely are you watching, or are you?
My role is not much at this stage. I'm just following the reports, and then I have to begin developing what I want to do with him at the end of the program, which was easy in Terrence's case because he successfully completed it. And I think the whole staff of the center came to his sentencing, and they were very proud of him, and they should have been. They put a lot of work, and he put a lot of work. I mean, I don't have many happy days in my courtroom, and Terrence was kind enough to give me one of them.
When you learn that perhaps they are not following the path that they need to follow in order to successfully complete the program, are you quick to bring out the hammer? I mean, how quickly do you act?
If I have someone on probation, yes, I am very quick. I am probably too quick, but I bring them in right away. On a program like this, part of my job as a judge is, if you have people in positions that are trained, then you let them do their job. And so in Terrence's case, when I had the initial bad reports, I didn't do anything at that time because they know what they're doing, and hopefully they'd have more patience than I would and develop him. So in the dual jurisdiction program, no, I will wait it out. But on probation, I am pretty quick.
Is there any effort that you're aware of, or you, Sarah, aware of to I'm not sure I have the right word here, but to kind of advance this program, to enhance it, to increase it, to broaden it somehow, because it does seem to be effective.
I'm not aware of anything right now.
The only thing I know, and I mentioned it before, is now they've raised the age from 17 to 17 and a half. I know that part of their efforts was to also increase the age of adulthood to 18. I know that was something that was in the legislature recently. It didn't pass. I think part of that was the dual jurisdiction program recognizes that children their minds don't develop until they're over the age of 18. So I think that was kind of an effort to maybe further this and open that net for other youth.
This is a whole new and expanding area, isn't it? The brain and the juvenile brain, the teenage brain, and the way that it develops. Is that coming into play with regard to the bench?
No, it really isn't. I mean, we are aware of mental disease and defects when someone takes a plea. That's one of the questions that we ask. And I think the court is going to get more involved in the future with analyzing that and making that a requirement of probation. I know the Department of Corrections has special wings for those with mental disease and defects. But right now, as part of the juvenile brain, That does not come into play because most of our offenders are adults.
Yeah, I'm told that the juvenile brain, the part that deals with responsibility, is the very last to develop in young people. How about you, Sarah? Is this something that you, as a defense attorney, do you utilize this knowledge in court?
I do. I only deal with juveniles right now. So that is something, of course, that I have immersed myself in. And absolutely, the science is fascinating. It's something that is supported not only by social science research, but has been accepted by the Supreme Court of the United States in Roper, Graham, and its progeny. So yes, absolutely. It's something that I think we need to emphasize. It's something that we need to recognize, is that brain is continuing to change. And like you said, that frontal lobe, the lobe that helps us think through things, isn't developed until after 18. So that's important to emphasize to the court.
As our time winds down, I think we have a call here. It's a somewhat cryptic, but can we take that call on line one? Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Jay from St. Louis. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, Jay.
I wanted to ask Terrence, what type of activities are you involved with at the MCYC? And then a quick comment for your other guests. Are there opportunities for folks here locally, like in the St. Louis area? I know myself, I belong to a couple of groups that would love to participate in something like this to keep young people from being incarcerated after committing a crime.
Thanks for the call.
The first question to answer that, the activities are sort of activities like group builders. So the group builders are to help the group keep the cohesion and keep the negative mindsets out of the group. Basically, it's for everything to run smooth, because when things don't run smooth in a group, it's easy to get sidetracked, and it's hard for people to stay focused on their personal goals. So we basically just do activities to keep everybody busy and proactive and thinking positive, being optimistic about what's going on around them. Because, I mean, you're there for 4 years, some 6 to 9 months. And so it's pretty easy to get negative. So the more you're active and the more you got your mind on what's positive, you think positive, you feel good. And so if you feel good in an uncomfortable place, your time is smoother.
What are you doing right now? You're working?
Yes.
And you're studying as well?
Yes.
Right. So you've got the full load going?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. With regard to the other part of the question, Judge, I'll put it to you. What else is the community doing, or can it do?
Well,
that's,
I mean,
that part of his question.
I mean, what the community can do is, this is such a loaded question. There's so much going on. I mean, the problems that we face by the end of this process are, we have kids without fathers. We have this just broken down world that they live in. And so I think anyone that wants to take responsibility for these guys that come in, and they're guys between 17 and 21, would be awesome. But the problem is, you have to stay with it. It has to be structured. It just can't be lighthearted. And it's very, very serious.
Sarah, thought?
I think if you want to get involved, I think you can call the Division of Youth Services. I think any outside organizations that want to get involved, we absolutely welcome that, and even welcome it down on Vannevenor at the juvenile court building that I work at now. We're always looking for programs to put young people into.
We're going to have to leave it at that point, because of the clock tells us we have to do that. I want to thank you all for being with us. Terrence, thank you for being with us. Congratulations on your success in getting through the program, and continued success for you.
Thank you.
Sarah Johnson with the Missouri Public Defender's Office, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work in that office. And Judge Jack Garvey, thank you for being with us. Always
Thanks,
a pleasure
Ryan.
To see you. We'll be back in just a moment. You know, they say that money may burn a hole in your pocket, but what about burning money? We'll get to that question in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.